Morning, afternoon, evening, everyone. Welcome to the podcast, the MyGrid GB, with myself, Andrew Crossland, and my very good friend Dave Kirby, who is in, I'm going to say he's in New Zealand. He's gone quiet.
I
Has
am in New
sound
Zealand. I
broken?
thought,
You
what
are.
was that?
I don't know. Well, I was saying, where are you in? I mean, you're not in your bedroom, are you? I assume.
Oh, were you ending it on he is in, as in like
I
the
was,
doctor
yeah.
is in? Oh, I thought you'd just forgotten where I lived. I was waiting for you to finish your intro. But yeah, no, I'm in. I'm in. I'm committed and I'm in Wellington. So
Well,
double in.
that's you're double in, and I'm glad we've had such a seamless start to this episode, which is great.
It's such a smooth and sophisticated way to lead into episode one.
It is. What great planning, Dave. What great planning.
It'll come with time. It'll come with time, I'm sure. Why have you brought me here today? Why am I in this cave of despair?
There's this amazing energy story going on around the world, and we really want to tell it to you, and we want to make it a bit fun, and also play some music as well, which I think would be a really cool little feature for an energy podcast. Who else plays music in an energy podcast?
Yeah.
I don't know what else, Dave. I mean, what should the audience expect and get excited about over the episodes that we're going to make?
From what I gather, how this is going to work is my role in this is going to be as general layman as we traverse the world of renewable energies. Andrew is not just Andrew Crossland, but Dr. Crossland, and has years and years of experience in the field and is very passionate about it. And I know absolutely sod all about it altogether. So, the way I'm thinking this is going to work is almost like the Doctor Who dynamic, if you will. So, Doctor Who
Yes.
classically knows everything about the universe, but you wouldn't have a show of just him on his own because he would just keep it in his head. He'd be just going, yeah, I understand that. And so to an audience, it's kind of boring. And so you need a layman, you need an earth human who doesn't know anything to be the audience that they can explain things to. So that's my role in this, as your companion, I
That
guess.
makes a lot of sense, and I guess just to be clear, I've never seen Doctor Who, so I would struggle with those references.
But
But
trust me, the context works.
it does work. It does work. And that's why I'm so pleased you're here as the normal guy, which is great. But
And it's so rare that I get called the normal guy, so we're off to a
madness.
winner.
We're off to a winner. I love it. But it and there's no better time really to launch an energy podcast, is there? With Well, I don't know what are your bills like in New Zealand, Dave? Are you paying a lot for electric over there at the minute? We're in the UK, everyone's panicking because tomorrow the bills go up £600 a year, which is about
Oof.
300 pints a year. No, it's not anymore, is it? It's about 100 pints a year, I think.
Oh, who knows how far a pint stretches these days.
Oh, madness.
Over here doesn't feel too bad. I mean, I think you've definitely told me in the past how good New Zealand is for being more or less self-reliant on its energy. It feels as though the energy crisis over in the UK is definitely a mixture of big factors between, obviously the ongoing health crisis and things happening in Europe, and it's all kind of coming in a perfect storm of excuses to bump up prices for the general everyday worker.
That's actually a pretty good summary, Dave. I think we could actually end the podcast right there.
Oh yeah, sorry.
No, as in this is great.
It's
Don't
summarized.
apologize. This is it. This is it is a crisis of a number of crises over here. And the people who are suffering are the poor, and the poor who pay, or the poor energy bill payers, essentially. We're talking several thousand pounds a year for energy for some people, and people are already poor. The food bank use is through the roof. I used to work as a trustee at a food bank here, and food bank use has been up, and one of the drivers for that is energy bills, unfortunately. So we so bills are really high over here, and really challenged. And what are the drivers for that? Well, everyone talks about gas prices. Well, gas, what is gas? Why do we use it? Why is it important? Gas is obviously a fossil fuel. Half of Britain's gas comes out of the North Sea. The rest of it comes from Norway, or the Norwegian part of the North Sea. It comes from Qatar, comes from the US, comes from Algeria, tiny little bit comes from Russia, and it comes all the way to Britain. And then we burn it. We burn it to make electricity, about 40% of our electricity, or we heat most of our houses with it. And our houses are really good at two things. One is, looking quite old, and two, leaking all that heat out of our houses. So we end up basically heating our houses, and then because our insulation is so bad, leaking all that heat out into the atmosphere, which is just really, really expensive and really, really inefficient. It's quite sad. Although in New Zealand, no better, Dave, because I bet you could probably put your finger through your wall in your house.
Insulation in New Zealand is shocking. And I guess if you're living at the top of the North Island where it's quite humid and you get kind of semi-tropical weather, it's not as bad. But as you head further south, the quality of the builds of the houses is just so noticeably poor. I always get irrationally riled up about the quality of housing in New Zealand. It's one of those things, like everything else, it's a multitude of factors that just leads to it being an absolute nightmare. One of the main problems they have in New Zealand is, of course, earthquakes. So you can't build your houses of bricks and mortar, because if you have a decent shift underneath and you get a decent sized crack through the wall, suddenly the entire integrity of the build is gone. And so that they tend to build them with
this wood, isn't it?
Older materials. It's a lot of wood and more malleable things.
Slightly going left here. I mean, I'm doing up a house at the moment, and I might put triple glazing in. Works like, what the hell's that? I was like, well, it's like double glazing, but you've got another pane of glass. What's double glazing? I was like, what?
You know, I'll be honest, that is the first time I've heard of triple glazing, which hopefully it's more of a technological advancement more than a necessity thing of
poorly
the next
made,
level
so
up of glazing.
In
40 years' time, there's going to be people like, oh, I've got dodecahedra glazing going on in my house.
It is actually just three layers of glass. They should just call it that. The bloke should have turned up. Do you want two layers or three layers of glass? I'll have three, please. Thank you.
Just build the whole thing out of glass, and no one is allowed to throw stones. And everyone just lives in glass cubes that are bulletproof level thick.
I mean, a slight aside, the highlight, I think, of my entire life was my girlfriend was around helping me do the house up, and she was putting the plasterboard on, and I made the point that must be because she went to boarding school, which I thought was great, and I think it almost ended our relationship, because I'd said the joke about 10 times that day to anybody who would listen, but...
You've got to lay those groundworks early. You've got to set the precedent early in the relationship. This is who I am. I make awful dad jokes.
I'm just a dad joke. Yeah, that's right. So gas. Right, we're burning gas in the UK. We're burning shed tons of it. And I wrote a book a couple of years ago. In fact, I wrote a book, and I used to write it in the pub. And then Dave would walk in the pub, and I'd stop writing. It was amazing. And the book said, look, if we keep burning gas and we don't have any other means of sort of backing up our wind and solar and nuclear power stations, we're going to be in trouble. And we're going to be in trouble because one day the gas is either going to get really expensive, someone abroad's going to start turning it off, or we're going to start running out short on supply. And I was actually wrong, because all three of those have happened, in effect. It wasn't an or. There's obviously the horrible crisis going on in Ukraine, which is stopping Russian gas, or putting a lot of pressure on stopping Russian gas being used, quite rightly, in my view. We have got a huge surge in demand for gas as people start switching off coal power stations, putting on gas, or just natural growth around the world as economies are growing and using more and more energy. And the price is going up as a result of that. And the UK say are going, right, we need electricity. We've got all the wind, that's all blowing, that's fine, it's nice and sunny, the nuclears are working all well, we've got some really dirty biomass going, but that's okay, apparently. We need some more, burn the gas. And that's just that burning and buying of gas is just driving prices sky high. And it's basically essentially a complete, I think, failure of energy policy for the past, I mean, dating back to, I mean, I should. I mean, I'm from a coal mining area. I should naturally always blame Thatcher, but it does actually date back to the sort of Thatcher era decisions that were made, which
if in
we're
doubt,
now locked with. If in doubt, blame Thatcher.
If in doubt, blame Thatcher.
Yeah.
This might be my first general layman point in the podcast, which is, you know, in terms of the comparisons between Britain and New Zealand. Not a million miles away in terms of how they are. They're both islands surrounded by relatively choppy seas.
Remarkably similar land area. I think it's like 100 square kilometres or 1,000 square kilometres. Really similar.
And temperature-wise, they're different hemispheres, but in the same kind of latitudes. Obviously, there's a huge gap in difference in population, which will obviously make a big difference. But if you look at Britain, it is an island surrounded by a lot of wind and a lot of water, both of which seem to be, you know, pretty decent methods of generating power. So why can't Britain become self-sufficient? What's stopping Britain being a self-sufficient nation with regards to energy?
I think the main thing, the major difference between the two, fundamentally, is the UK is 70 million people and New Zealand is 5.
Yeah.
So we've got, you know, whatever ratio that is.
Not even 5 million, just 5. There's me, five. There's my fiancé, there's Jeff, and there's a couple down the road, and that is it.
That's it, just 5 people. And they're having a great time, a bit lonely, conversation runs a bit dry, so he has to talk to me about energy. But yeah, I know it is mad. It is, and that's one fundamental difference. We use a lot of energy in the UK, full stop. New Zealand's not very efficient with it, but it can kind of get away with it because it's got loads of resource. The other quite handy thing New Zealand has is or did have, which is actually a really interesting sort of subtopic, is the Southern Alps, which is the mountain range that runs down the west side of the South Island, and it produces essentially, it's got really high mountains, really really good for hydroelectricity. And that provided about 60% of New Zealand's electricity. Interestingly, hydro over there is seen as quite a dirty form of energy generation. You know, you're damming off these rivers and stopping natural flows of water and stopping fish migrating or whatever. In the UK, I think hydro is seen as quite green because it's low carbon. Unfortunately, other than Steep Hill in Lincoln, we just don't have many high hills over here. So I think most of the African continent is higher than Britain. You know, so we don't have that height to make the hydro. So we're looking at, you know, other sources, as you say, wind, which is about 20-30% of our energy a year, electricity a year, and a big drive for nuclear, which we can't build at the moment ourselves because we stopped building them during the early 1990s.
Is nuclear a good option? I don't really understand, you know, this really basic connection in my head, which is nuclear equals bad. And I don't know whether it's just from watching too many episodes of The Simpsons and Mr. Burns, but I just have that connection in my head. And then people talk about nuclear energy, and I gather that it is a great way of getting a lot of energy very well, but it seems to me as though, like, in the grand scheme of things, maybe the risks don't quite weigh up enough for me to say, hey, let's have this thing that might at any point either come under attack or fail and do a lot of damage.
I think if you took a sample of 95% of people in energy or the electricity industry and say, if you had one type of power station, what would it be? I think historically most people would have still said, build me a nuclear power station, people in the industry. And they love them because they don't take up much land. People will say that they're safe if managed correctly. They'll ignore the fact we've got to deal with the waste.
Line though that is, you know, like,
what
airplane safe if they're managed correctly is such a brilliant line. It's like when people say, like, guns don't kill people, people kill people. Yeah, but you know, it kind of still happens.
Well, let's not shoot ourselves in the foot, which is what humans would do. So people love nuclear.
Yeah, we'll bite the bullet. We'll move on.
We'll bite the bullet and move on. I love it. Yeah. So yeah, we've shot that load. that's not what I meant. Nuclear power. Swiftly, nuclear power. Right. So people in the industry love it. It's not a saying that fills you with confidence, is it? They're fine unless they go wrong, or they're fine if managed correctly. But you know, people in the industry love them. They produce what they call base load, which means they're always on, they're always providing electricity. Of course, that's true unless they're down for maintenance. But most of the time, you know, they're on and producing power and feeding the grid. And it's all you know, very suited to large institutional investors who like to build big power stations, was the theory. On the flip side, of course, you know, you've got some sort of pretty boring issues of, like, you can't turn nuclear power stations on or off very easily. So, you know, at night, Dave, when everyone gets home and makes a cup of tea, you can't turn the nukes on just to boil the kettles. But they are, and obviously, you know, they're extremely expensive, 2-3 times the price of normal electricity generation, maybe more in the UK, because they are enormous buildings, enormous amounts of concrete, enormous amounts of engineering, enormous amounts of engineering for safety. Everything is triple locked, triple glazed in effect. And that was a good reference. And you know, it's just, you got a lot of costs locked in them, and it makes it very expensive. And if you go ask people what would you rather have, they would not put nuclear on top of their list, which is problematic.
In terms of Britain, to pull Britain out of the doldrums of the energy crisis, what do you think is the most important thing that they should start emphasizing energy wise?
Not to think that anything is the magic bullet is, I think, really, yeah, really important. So I, to be controversial, I don't see a way, and controversial in the field I work in, which is renewables, I don't see a way that Britain can meet its energy needs affordably, reliably, etc., without having nuclear power stations. But alongside that, I think it needs as much wind, as much solar as it can get to produce energy in a, you know, in a super low carbon, super environmentally friendly way. You know, nuclear is almost like the, you know, you've got to have it, really. It's like a fried breakfast in Scotland. You've got to eat their weird sausages. Do you know what I mean? It's like you've kind of got to get on and build them. And yeah, and if you choose not to build nuclear power stations, you're going to have to burn gas, which is expensive and unreliable. And you are going to, at some point, realize, oh, shoot, I need to get my energy from somewhere. How do I do it? I can't build a nuclear power station because everyone who knew how to do it is now dead, retired, or working abroad, which is essentially where we've got to.
I will say you've just probably lost half your audience by slamming the square sausage of Scotland. It's just better than a normal sausage. It's so much easier. Like, sausages are a pain in the arse a lot of the time. Are they cooked inside? Are they burnt on the outside but still undercooked inside? Are they going to explode at any point? The stress level in sausages is not worth the hassle, and 90% of the time not worth the flavour inside. Square sausage, shape, done. Flat, fry, flip. Done. Beautiful.
Yeah, it is easier. I think you get a better packaging volume if you think about a square sausage rather than a round one.
More bang for your buck.
More bang. Yeah, that is it's several sausage references there, which I'm very impressed with. And you know, yeah, I
and thank
I,
you for know. Listening to Andrew and David's sausage podcast episode one. There.
Yeah, we butchered it a bit. Is that a really bad, a bad sausage bun, isn't it? There's better ones out there.
But you were on a roll, so
yeah, right, that's better. That's better. Thanks, Dave.
So, I mean, we've covered quite a bit there so far. I think we've established that everyone is doomed. Nuclear power is the only way forward. Everything's grim. No one can afford power. Here's a song.
Yes, a song. Yes, yes, absolutely. And not only are we going to talk about energy, we're going to illuminate it with some beautiful music.
So another one of my very few contributions to the podcast is going to be acting as a conduit to knowledge via you and all the things you know about where we are in the world. I am a part-time musician, full-time idiot. The idea would be, hopefully, as this thing progresses, I will probably write a few more bespoke songs about whatever we're talking about that week. So I'm going to play one of my songs, very loosely fitting into some of the things we talked about. I'm from Middlesbrough in the northeast of England, and a certain government decided to close down a lot of the power plants and move a lot of it abroad, and it caused a lot of unemployment and stress in the area. Pretty typical for them, but we won't name names. So this is just something about that. It's a bit outdated, and it's also a little bit defeatist now, knowing how things went historically. Mm. Anyway, this is a song about that. It's called SOS, which at the time stood for Save Our Steel. Hope you like it.
That was superb. So good.
Cheers, really, Matt. Good. Well, thank you so much for having me along in episode one. Hopefully, we continue and we learn and we progress.
Yeah, that was superb. And I think I'm in such a good mood after your song, Dave. Looking forward to episode two.
Not often people are in a good mood after hearing a song like that. But it's good to hear.
Yeah. But yeah, episode two is coming soon. And thank you for your time, Dave. And
thank you very much.
And thank you to the audience for your time. And we'll see you in the next episode.
We'll catch you next time.